Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Scott Kelly of Geometric Reliability. Welcome back, Scott.
Hi, James. I hope all is well, and thank you for having me back.
Hey, it's a pleasure to have you back. I know the ABCs of asset management, the importance of an asset management model, those episodes have done very well. Gotten lots of listens, lots of downloads, so thought it was about time to bring you back on and let's have some more good conversations around asset management and corporate reliability programs. So,
yeah, I appreciate coming back on, and it's always nice to hear that you get a lot of downloads and people are actually excited about moving forward in corporate reliability.
Absolutely. Now, Scott, for those that haven't had the opportunity to listen to those previous episodes, which we'll link in the show notes, you're a maintenance, asset management, reliability expert. You're the founder of Geometric Reliability, and you've been involved in maintenance, reliability, and asset management for 25-plus years, correct?
That is correct. In addition to that, I also had developed the plant excellence model along with founding the Geometric Reliability Company.
Yes, absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit about Geometric Reliability?
Geometric Reliability is a boutique consulting firm dealing in asset management, maintenance reliability, pretty much cradle to grave. Everything from dealing with the design, development of maintenance and reliability strategies, implementation of CMMS, putting together risk-based criticality analysis, mitigation strategies, spare part strategies, and dealing with the processes to support those and also the metrics.
Absolutely. Wide range, and you know, they all reflect the six cells of the plant excellence model. So people that want to learn more about those, you can check out the previous shows on each one of those cells specifically. And we'll be sure to link to those in the show notes. Scott, one of the things that I come across quite often is when a corporate group comes into a site, they want to make all these reliability changes. They're there for a week, and then they run away. And I don't say run away in a bad way, but they're off to the next site to implement the same thing at another site. Do you see this often?
I see it so often, James. I actually sort of coined the phrase drive-by reliability. And you and I have discussed it before, but you know, the question being is whether or not the organization is going to be a victim of a drive-by.
Yes, absolutely. Now, can you explain what that drive-by reliability is, or reliability drive-by, to our listeners?
Be happy to. What I'm talking about is you've got a fairly sophisticated or multi-site, multinational manufacturing organization. Corporate has the foresight to say, hey, we're going to support the sites. We want to improve reliability. We want to improve productivity. We want to reduce cost. So they form a small group, usually somewhere between less than five people, and that group is to support all the plants. So they may or may not develop a model of asset management, reliability, operational excellence. But what they'll do is they go to the site and they literally will show up, do some form of a tour or assessment. They'll try and educate and or roll out some kind of a asset management strategy from a high level and or a tactical level. They're there for 3 or 4 days, and then they leave. You had alluded to that. they're off to the next site. So in many cases, in order to afford something of this magnitude, we're talking about a company that has 5, 10, 15 sites, and you've got 3 to 5 people trying to support them. They can't spend very much time at any one particular location.
Yes, absolutely. And they're forced to go in, be quick, transfer as much knowledge as they can in that short amount of time, then jump to the next site very, very quickly. And what I find is that doesn't provide the required amount of time to build capability, build confidence in that system, instill or embed those new changes that's going on. And as a result, what I find is they're coming back to the same site to address what they thought was already implemented, and the whole maintenance program or asset management program really doesn't take effect. So with this, when this occurs, you know, the sites are kind of a victim because of this. We got to do these changes because corporate said we have to, but we don't have any more resources internally to do this, and the external resources, which are supposed to help, are running away after a single day. So how can these sites cope with some of that?
Well, in many cases, it's we're talking about coping, but in many cases, this is even before they get a chance to cope with that. It usually will take a year to year and a half before they realize that this is not an effective method. So they'll go through that process, and I mean, as we talked about, there's 3 or 4 people, 10, 15 sites. If you do the math, 1 or 2 people can only be on so many sites at a particular time. So you're really only looking at 3 or 4 weeks per year that anyone could be on site anyway, because they've spread themselves so thin and they're trying to make this occur. The other side of it is the corporate group really doesn't understand that just because you've sent down a process, just because you've sent down a method or a procedure, does the site have the technical ability and or the knowledge of reliability to instill that? And then additionally, do they have the time? I always make the joke that they're so busy rowing the boat that they don't have time to fix the motor that's attached to the back of it. And I don't see that changing. And as you also alluded to, the fact that in order to put something in place, in order for it to have any kind of hope of sustaining, it takes 3, 4, 5, maybe even 8 weeks of constant policing and change to put that in place at all.
Yes, one of the things that I found through my experience is 8 to 12 weeks is the magic number to have people on site coaching, holding people accountable, building capability to make it sustainable. I find if it's less than that, chances are you'll be back fighting that same issue again and again.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And even though the 8 to 12 weeks is there, you still probably don't have it completely ingrained. You've just made sure that everybody knows that it's important enough that we're going to invest 8 to 12 weeks into it. And then you're going to actually have to come back to it once a month for the next year to year and a half, just to make it, I hate to use the term institutionalized, but it's to make it a process that is sustainable.
Yes, absolutely. You have to have that follow-up, that governance, that accountability to make it work. Even after, like you alluded, those 8 to 12 weeks have been in place with that coaching, you have to have follow-up calls, track the progress to the plan. Are we meeting our targets? Are we not meeting those targets? If we're not, what are we doing to correct that and get back to that? But unfortunately, if you've been a victim of a reliability drive-by, you typically don't get those 8 to 12 weeks, and you probably don't get a consistent once a month check-in to see how you're doing and what support do you need to correct any underperformances that you're experiencing.
Yeah, additionally, when you're talking 2 or 3 people trying to support 10, 15 sites, every single site is different. Every single site has its own nuances, its own dynamic, its own culture. As such, when you try and go around from site to site and you've been gone for 3 months, it becomes very difficult to to become attuned to that culture, and also remember that when you come back. So unless you're going to take the time to put the, as you said, 8 to 12 weeks up front, it's almost like a wasted effort.
Absolutely. It is, because you're not embedding it. And as we've talked about before numerous times, this all starts with people. You have to understand the changes that they're going to go through, build that change management plan, lead them along that change, help them along that change curve. And if you don't, it's not sustainable. And in my experience, unless there's someone really, really good out there that I'm unaware of, you can't do all that in a single week. You can't lead people through that much of a change in a single week.
Right. And as you and I had talked about, and we've even had papers about, we've had blogs about, the ABCs, if you don't have that true A part of the ABCs, always have the right executive champion, you're going to fail anyway. So what happens in a lot of cases is you don't have the right executive champion. You do not have the vice president of manufacturing or the CEO saying, this is important to me. Plants, you will do this. What you have is a group of internal consultants at the corporate level trying to convince people at the site level to change. And unless that the site and or site management and rolls up to the VP and the CEO, unless this is important to them, it will never be supported. It will never be sustainable. I don't care how good your corporate consulting group is.
Yeah, I've seen this where, you know, they have that corporate group to do these exact things, but it's pretty much given lip service. Yeah, we have you here. Yeah, we'll fly you around to sites occasionally, but you're not getting extra support. You're not getting training. You're not going to get anything else you need to make this successful. If you can't do it by yourself, then that's it. And Unfortunately, that leads to more and more of these reliability drive-bys, because they're trying that reliability consultant, the internal one, is struggling to try and get all sites moving in the right direction. Now, the other thing I see, it relates right back to that lack of direction, is typically those reliability drive-bys tend to be very tactical in nature. It's a new process to manage this. It's a new training program for this. It's not governed by a strategic plan or an asset management model to guide where we're going long-term. It's very tactical and ad hoc in nature, I find.
Absolutely. Very seldom do you find a corporate group that actually is taking the time and effort to build a model of asset management or operational excellence, or how maybe they do have a corporate model of operational excellence, but the asset management or reliability component of that is not really well thought out, or it's so complicated nobody gets it.
Yes, absolutely. And then with that, the likelihood of them having an assessment to understand where that site is starting out and what they need to do to get to that end goal, that's even less likely, I find, is having those nice detailed assessments to guide that week that they're there on site.
Yeah, unless you have that A of the ABCs, unless you have the B, right, before you begin, have that modeler asset manage or modeler vision of what it's supposed to look like, you're going to run into brick walls over and over again. And worse yet, I see some organizations that have these corporate groups, and their time must be paid for by the sites. So therefore, they spend 60% of their time trying to convince the sites to let them come on board, to pay for their time. And as such, they are very ineffective or don't get used very much. Now, I'm not saying that the sites should get it for free, but I'm not saying also that they can only come on board if, in fact, the site wants them to come on board. This has to be driven from an executive level. It has to be supported from an executive level, and it has to be paid for by both corporate and by the sites. There has to be skin in the game, but for everybody.
Absolutely. If not, then it's a, hey, I'm here for the week, and then after that, I'll see you later. Doesn't bother me if you're successful or not, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And then once that corporate reliability group leaves, that site is left with, okay, here's where they want us to go. How are we going to get there? What do we got to do? And that just, what I find typically, leads to more confusion and chaos in that site for the next little bit, causing their performance to actually go down because they're trying to figure out what do they need to do, how are they going to do it, all these other things. Have you seen that before?
Oh, without a doubt. And there's a, then it becomes a poison pill, so to speak, so they feel less likely to bring in the corporate resource because every time they do, it creates chaos. It creates a drop in productivity. It creates resource loading issues. So it's always difficult to create that desire, the need, and the balance of resources.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com. Yes, it definitely is. It's, you know, at least if we had that model and that assessment, we could understand and lay out that roadmap. But when most organizations or reliability groups don't have that and they walk in, it just leads to so much issues with manning and scheduling and prioritization of what do we need to work on this week from a management
right.
standpoint. It's painful to watch.
And it's painful, more painful to even be part of it.
Absolutely. Now, the one other thing I often see with these reliability drive-bys is that same corporate group that's responsible for implementing these new processes or systems, what they do is they come in to provide training. And they might not be that subject matter expert. They might not be that expert facilitator. But now they have to provide training on a specific topic, whether it's, you know, maintenance planning, scheduling, for example, or spare parts management. And the organization assumes since they're the consultant for this, they can provide training for all these various things. Is that the right approach, though?
You know, I mean, I'm a firm believer that, change agents to include training have to be done by the SME or by an SME. Just because you are the corporate resource and you understand maintenance and reliability and you may understand that specific subject doesn't mean that you have a depth that's necessary to train it. But all too often, senior executives they want to cheap out, so to speak, and they believe that they can do it internally. And they try and get people to train something that they really do not have the depth. And as such, they do a lackluster job of really instilling the knowledge that comes with that.
And that just leads to more chaos and confusion at the site because maybe they maybe the learners took away a little bit of that training. Maybe they understand a couple of key concepts, but they don't know how to apply it. They don't know how to embed it because once that training is done, that corporate person is back off to the next site to continue on that training program. But there was no coaching. There was no capability building. If you think of the change model, ADCAR, knowledge is one piece, but the ability to do that is a whole other piece that requires a whole different effort. And that is typically missed out, I find, when you use these corporate groups to go implement these sort of trainings.
I'm a firm believer that unless you can take the time and effort to coach, mentor, or take the academic and turn it into practical, you've almost wasted your money. Because the amount of retention from the people getting the training is fairly low. We're talking 5 to 15% of everything they hear. And the amount of that actually makes it into the workplace in a practical application is even less. So you may spend a week in training, if you're lucky, and they may only bring one tiny little tidbit and be able to put it into practice.
Yes, absolutely. Now, so many organizations have been a victim of this reliability drive-by. The 1 week on the site caused chaos and confusion and whisked away. To only come back 3 or 4 months later, if they're lucky. With this sort of approach, can any organizations expect meaningful and sustainable returns or gains in their asset management program?
If, in fact, everything that you and I have described is the case, then the answer is no. They may see pockets of excellence, but it's usually because the individual at the site is the charismatic leader that really wants to see that happen. But by and large, I would say no, that is not a successful model.
Okay, so I know we've picked a lot on the corporate reliability groups here so far. So if we're thinking of the corporate reliability group, how do they balance that trifecta of cost, time, and resources to prevent these reliability drive-bys and help the site be successful? What can they do differently?
Well, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, James. I mean, that's a 20 or 30 minute discussion. What I would like to say is they need to understand that they can't do it all. They need to understand that the site doesn't have the resources to just automatically give up personnel or dedicate personnel to a specific thing full time. They need to be prepared to supplement the site with SMEs, be it themselves or others that they bring in. They need to have the support of the senior management that this is not an optional, that success is not, as we would say, I guess success is not optional either. In other words, we will make this work. It's not a pilot. It's just a first step in their process.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think back to working with this engineer, and he said, sometimes to speed up, you have to slow down. So taking the time to make sure you do your due diligence, get that upper support, come out with a plan, a model, an assessment, and take it in a methodical approach, I think is the best approach for those corporate reliability groups.
And they need to have the senior level management buy-in completely, dedication completely, and budget to actually make things happen. And it has to be a realistic budget. If they think they can do this in a cheap manner, they're actually just spinning their wheels, and 2 or 3 years later, they'll dissolve the corporate group because they didn't have any impact.
Yep, absolutely. So what is the one thing you want to say to the people that are experiencing these reliability drive-bys?
Be prepared to say no. Be prepared to not let corporate dictate to you without giving you support.
Don't be afraid to stand up and push back if you know it's not going to be successful. Yep.
That's correct.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's very, very important. So with that, Scott, I think we have a couple questions we need to answer on another episode. One is, how can a corporate reliability group help people or be effective? And then the second one is, if you're a victim of a reliability drive-by, how can you survive it?
Yeah, you're right on track. That's exactly right. Because these corporate groups do exist. They will continue to exist. How do we help organizations set the corporate group up so that they do succeed? And how do we actually help those that are already being a victim survive and or flourish, take it to the next level?
Absolutely. So we got some homework to do to come up with some good conversations around those two. And I'm looking forward to having those conversations with you on those specific topics. Now, in the meantime, where can people find out more about you and what you're up to?
At any given time, someone can find me on LinkedIn, Scott Kelly. I also have my company on LinkedIn, Geometric Reliability. You can also find me via the website, www.geometricreliability.com.
Excellent. And we'll make sure to link to those in the show notes so people can get in touch with you. And if you have a question, if you have a comment about this specific topic, don't hesitate to reach out to either myself or Scott on LinkedIn, via email. You can even give me a call. Let us know what your questions and comments are, and we'll make sure to try and answer those in one of the two upcoming topics. And hopefully we'll be able to help you guys improve your asset management program.
Additionally, I would say if there's anyone that wants to be a guest that's actually experiencing a drive-by, I would very much like to talk to you and bring you into the conversation.
Yes, that would be excellent to get another point of view on it. That would be perfect. So with that, Scott, I want to thank you for taking your time today to have this conversation with me, and you have yourself a great day.
You too, James. Thank you for having me. I always enjoy it.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.